an interview of John Derby Russell of 5616 Riverview Drive, Cooper Township, Kalamazoo County. He lives on Section 35 with approximately 55 acres of land. The interview will be conducted by Gail L. Russell, his daughter-in-law, on February 27th, 1976. The interview will be conducted around 8 o'clock in the evening. The temperature is 40 degrees. The weather all week has been very warm in the 50s and 60s.
And tell where he came from. Was he married when he came and all that?
From Ripley, New York, in 1857, and he took up the farm, the Dave Buchanan, the president's come?
What, did Dave Buchanan went into
office?
Huh? Dave Buchanan went into office?
Yeah, but they used to, instead of the first year like they do now, it was a
inaugurated
sometime in
July?
In the spring.
Spring.
And then the father and Roderick come from Ripley, New York with an ox and a horse in a wagon. And they carried what?
It would be an ox and horse.
Yes, an ox and a horse. And they carried what belongings they could load in a wagon. And the mother, and let's see, that would be George and Frank and two girls. Let's see, how many boys were there? There was George, Frank and Charlie, and Ellen and Adelaide comes to Sturgis by train, and from Sturgis to Kalamazoo by stagecoach, and they stayed there first couple of nights where the Pete Skipper's building is now, right next to the Jaron ID. That was a kind of a rooming house there.
Right across from the Wickle
Stop? Right across from there, yeah. Little old house in there.
Well,
that house stood there for years.
Yeah.
And then they, Roderick and the father started and built this temporary log house, and they lived in that for two or three years, and then they built this house, and they had the lumber sawed up. They drawed the lumber and the plaster from Grand Rapids, and that was their first building that they built here. Then the barns followed. They built the barn across the road, and then
what kind of heat did they have?
Just good old stove wood.
Pot belly
stove, sure.
And what kind of plumbing did they have?
A back house.
I mean, they brought their water in from outside, or did they have a hand pump in the kitchen?
No, God, they didn't have a hand pump. They had an old cistern they used to go out there and dip the water out of the cistern to carry it in the house.
Well,
Yeah.
And then they had their well, and they would carry the well in, carry the water in the house. And the stoves them days had reservoirs on it, would hold maybe 4 or 5 gallons of water. And they got their rainwater for their dishes, and the other water was used for feed, the coffee and stuff like that. See? Mm-hmm.
And what did they have on the farm?
Well, they just started in a small way with corn, and then they used to go, went to to Grand Rapids with a team of horses and drawed home lime. And they thought years ago that they had to, when they planted the corn, they had to put a handful of lime down to start the corn, see. And they would buy their, get their lime up there and haul it home and use it for, practically for fertilizer, see. Mm-hmm. And
so then they just
kind of
had a general farm?
Huh?
They had a general farm?
Yeah, then they got into the cattle, and they'd, on the start, they'd raise enough for their, home use, home kill work. We had a brick smokehouse that we used to smoke our hams, and all our fruits was canned and put down in the basement for them. We didn't know what canned fruit was, you know.
Yeah.
Years ago, they just had.
Don't forget the old ice house either.
Did
you have an ice house?
Yeah, we had an ice. We built an ice house,
yeah.
And. We used to get a carload of ice with one of the neighbors. We used to get 2 carloads of ice, and I think we give $17 for the carload of ice, shipped and laid down to Cooper, and the neighbors would all chip in and fill the ice house every year, once a year, and they was always felt free to come down and get ice, cake of ice anytime they wanted to.
Did it last the whole year?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had, oh, God, it was twice as big as
this. What did they make it out of? To make it stay cold?
Oh, they got it way up here to Crooked Lake. See, they had all the ice that come in Kalamazoo come in to see CKNS.
Yeah.
And they had a mammoth big ice house up there, and they used to put up, hundreds of tons of ice. And they cut it with a horse and a cutter, and then they'd take that uptown in carloads, and they had years ago the ice and fuel company always delivered their ice in with horse-drawn wagons, see.
Mm-hmm.
And then the meat markets used to they used to have to buy quite a lot of ice, and they'd had big ice chests. They'd unload a whole truckload of ice in their coolers to keep it cool.
Well, what did they build the building out of that kept the ice cold?
Oh, well, they built it with 3 walls and filled it in, but treated with sawdust. See?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then covered it over. We cover ours over with we get somebody had a marche. We'd get a load of marche, mm-hmm. and cover right over the top of it. See, it's a body of ice that keeps ice. You know, of course they'd lose a certain amount that would melt, but we'd have ice practically all summer,
mm-hmm.
and.
What's the CKS or whatever?
That's the Chicago, Kalamazoo, and Saginaw.
Is that the railroad?
Yeah, that comes through here after grandfather arrived here. They came through and wanted the right of way, and they got the right of way all the way up through to Richmond, and Pressy, and Delton, and Cloverdale and into Hastings, and then from Hastings they went from Hastings to Woodbury. Mm-hmm. They railroad run that far. This used to be the busiest railroad you ever see.
I bet it was.
Oh, gee, every morning at 6:30, I think the old passenger train went down to go up to Woodbury. And then it would come back about 10:30, and you could set your watch for that train. And then that was a passenger train, see, two coaches. And then the freight would come out, come down. They'd come down about 9 o'clock, see, or 9 or 10 o'clock. And they'd go way up to Woodbury, and they'd have coal, and they'd have carloads of lumber and stuff like that to haul up to Woodbury, and then they haul wheat and oats and farm stuff back down to Kalamazoo, and then from there it'd be transferred to Chicago and Michigan Central. See. Oh, that was a busy road. That was, and they'd all the livestock would come down. We didn't know what. We didn't know what processing hogs or cattle was. Them days they had little plants, a couple little places, but all the carloads of pigs would come by here on in these box cars, you know, and they'd be transferred from the CKNS onto the New York Central. They'd go right in Chicago, see.
Yeah.
And same way with the beef cattle, the sheep. And all that would be all loaded out of the sea. There's no such thing as trucks.
Yeah.
And they'd be loaded out. And that's where Chicago got its name. That was the biggest livestock market in the world.
And how many acres was the farm originally?
Yeah,
120.
120 acres?
Yeah, 120.
And they plowed with horses?
Yeah, they plowed with horses. Oxen and horses. We used some oxen and horses, but they finally got to using horses. And
who were some of your neighbors? Can you remember any of them?
Yeah, it was Fervinus, owned the Keys farm, and then Thomas owned it where Harding's was, and then Shaw Farm, and then across from the community house was the Murray Farm, and then there was one house up on the corner, one farm up on the corner, where Gulf Station is. Not Gulf, but where that Progressive Station.
Oh, where Progressive is. Yeah.
There was a house up there, a farm up there. Let's see, there's one. I don't think there's over 7 or 8 houses between here and the River Bridge.
Yeah. What about north? Did you have any neighbors that way?
Yeah, the Travis's was down there, and Governor Troop owned the. He was the. He was a New York governor. I never found out until I always thought he was a Michigan governor, but I think Alvin Little called up Dunbar. He was authority on anything like that.
I think so.
And he says, we got a man down here that says that this old Springbrook farm is owned by Governor Troop. And he says, well, we can't find where he was no governor in Michigan. He said, well, no, he wasn't. He was governor of New York. But he came down and bought that. And, oh, gee, that was a beautiful place. That was a show place. That creek run in there, and then big elm trees, and there was groves in there. And that was a beautiful. Well, then I think he died. And they, let's see, the 300, and, wait a minute, there was, 480s would be how much? 480s would be 32.
320.
Well, I think it, it was 320 acres, and then a family from Chicago, McNabb, that bought the place, and she was quite a society woman. She was a Chicago society woman, and
What a letdown when she came to Cooper.
Well,
so
no,
God,
she was.
No, I'm just kidding.
She was an aristocrat. She didn't. And then she was quite a society-minded woman. I guess her husband was in poor health. And anyway, they kept mortgages in their place. See, and finally, a jewelry by the jewelry store man by the name of Wortley. Wortley's jewelry store, an old time jewelry, one of the best jewelry stores in town. He had the first mortgage on it. And gradually, they weren't able to pay for it, and he had to take it over, see? Well, then, Mr. Brignall from Chicago was in the coal business in Chicago, and he came through from Michigan and bought, him and his brother bought both sides of the road, see, the, I think it's 320 acres, what did I say, 380s would be, 480s would be 320 acres, yeah, I think he bought all the farms, see. Well, then they operated the farm. Well, then before that, this Monroe, they owned the old Bunbury farm. Mm-hmm. That was the one that the bishop had. Well, she's heard about it.
I know, but she's
going
to
be going on the tape.
Huh?
It's a going on the tape.
Oh, is it going? Oh, I see. Get it off.
Well, was there any stores?
The what?
Was there any stores in this parchment area? When
no,
was the first store?
No, there's a bar over here to the, where they, where that Bettner Hospital is. That was the old
out on Gull Road?
Yeah, that's old Hunt's Tavern. That was
the
drinking place for all the farmers.
I guess so.
They drove their horses down there and teams of horses and single horses, and they had a bar there and a hotel. And many a wild woman landed up there. And I should have said that.
That's okay. They don't care. So when was the first store in Parchment, in this area?
Gail.
I remember Goosen's. Was that the first one?
Oh, no.
Who?
Was there one before Goosen's?
Oh, there must have been, because Goosen's came. We were there when
I know. I figured.
Now, wait a minute. There was first door was the community house that Mr. Kindlebrett built for the community.
And that was the first, otherwise he had to go to Kalamazoo or
Plainville
or something.
And he started in, and he thought he'd start a store to run for the help to buy the groceries.
Uh-huh.
And then he did, he opened up a grocery store, and then a few other stores commenced to raise the devil about it and tried to boycott him. And then he turned it into a restaurant for the help, see.
Oh.
And he run it for there used to be a meeting place there for the people gathered parties, and they wanted the community help. But I think that was the first store. I dug all them cellars there, Mrs. Knight's cellar, and where, what's her name, that runs a drugstore, her store, her little base of business, and the one on where they what's that family's name that goes over to our church next to... Ferguson.
Yeah,
Ferguson. And then there was another house on the corner where the oil station is. And,
I think that red building there, that Preddum Run, I think that was older.
That was an old story. Yeah, that was when the Watsons started that.
Watsons.
Where Jack's is now. When the sugar beet factory left, they turned that into a
store. Yeah, well, the sugar beet factory that dissolved. They only operated on about 2 or 3 years, and they went through the ringer and closed
it down.
Well,
tell us about the sugar beet factory, because not very many people know about that.
Oh, no, that was beautiful. That was almost as big as the parchment was.
Yeah, that was the first thing.
And a barrel factory, and they made their own barrels, and they tore the barrels out, and they drove steady and run right over to the factory. You could go right there and see them rolling over there. And then they operated there, and they shipped in some Russians.
How come they did that?
They worked in the beets.
They all worked.
Oh, I see. They were used to working.
And they was great big. And you know where that's, there's a, after you across the front of the bank there, across from the bank, there's a little driveway down into the, well, that was a lane in there. And these Russians lived in where that, right in there, they had a barrel factory there, and another building next to the barrel factory where the Russians stayed. Stayed there, and he used to come out in that lot and play ball Sundays. Gosh, they were great big fellas, all big six-footers, you know. And they'd play ball out there when there was Sundays, when they wasn't working. But Noah Watson, I think Watson was about the first store that started out here. Well, then, down in the bend of the road, Art Hudson built the first store down there, where the drugstore is.
Where Parchment Farm?
Yeah, where the drugstore is. He built that first corner store, and then he added on the barber shop, and then Ralston Phillips had a little grocery store on the end there. Mm-hmm. Well, then they operated there for 25 years, I guess. And then Harding bought them out. That was Harding's first start in Kalamazoo. It was right down there that Ralston Phillips. And they sold out, and then they built this Hudson Manor. I don't know what they call it now. Hudson Apartments up across from Ross.
Across from where Belial's is now. Across from Belial's?
Yeah.
Now? Yeah.
Okay. Is that Hudson
Manor?
Parchment Manor.
No.
Yeah, and I dug a cellar for that.
Yeah.
And I helped to dig it. And
then, what was your first job?
Huh?
What was your first job?
First job I ever had, I went to work up to the parchment for $1 a day. And I was just a kid, see. It was against the law for him to hire me at that time, even at that time. And I know Duluth come along, and he says, how old are you? I told him. And he kind of shook his head, didn't say anything more. And we worked there about a week, and there was a car, they had a one end of the building was had a boiler there. And there was a carload of coal come in. They'd run out of coal, and carload of coal come in, so they took everybody out of the mill and said, you go out and unload coal, see. And so I did all of that. So I, old Kip Mabel was a livestock dealer, and I used to know him. He used to come in there, him and Dad. And he was running a slaughterhouse over across the river. I thought, well, I'll go and see old Kip this afternoon. And so I instead of going up on the coal pile, there was there was bookkeepers up there throwing off coal, and machine men,
everybody.
Throwing off coal. So I thought there's no room for me, and I didn't. At that time, I didn't like to handle coal anyway. So a couple of days later, next day I come back, they said, "Russell, where in the world did you go? We looked this country all over for you." I just crossed the river, and then the parchment, after the parchment first got started, that commenced to grow, see.
Yeah.
And they put on that road that goes down to the chemical factory, they built that on, and they put out two big parchment machines, but they used to draw a shawl that lived at the community house, where the old community house is. Mr. Kinneberger made a deal with them to haul the paper up to the freight offices. So we had a one-horse wagon. We used to draw the paper, all this carton paper, you know, and wax liner and stuff up to the freight house. And Kinneberger, Zimmerman come along one time and he says, "Here, Dirk," he says, "here's 50 cents. You have Harry get me a pint of whiskey." So Harry drank like a fish.
Be careful.
Well, I shouldn't have said that.
This will be good, Hale.
You can cut that off. Can you cut that off?
Yeah, I'll try.
Well, anyway, we come home with a one-horse wagon, and I had the pint of whiskey under the seat, and he was right there to meet us. He didn't dare to let Kinneberger receive the liquor. There was two or three boys from Cherry Bowman and this Juggy Martin, two of the Martin boys. Mm-hmm. They moved out right where the CKNS came down, mm-hmm, by the mill. They pitched a tent out there, and they lived there for 2 years in the tent. And Juggy used to be the cooking. He'd do the cooking, and Cherry would do the washing the dishes.
He did that picture that's out there.
Oh,
right?
Did he?
Yeah.
I know it. In the pictures they had in some of those books from long ago, it showed when they had the sugar beet factory, that a lot of the Russian people were living in tents.
They lived in tents there. Yeah.
And you used that sugar beet pulp for fertilizer?
Yeah, we used the sugar beet pulp. They didn't have much. Now they later right shortly after. Then they found out how to dry it, see. Mm-hmm. And now it's $4 or $5 a hundred. Mm-hmm. They dried beet pulp, see. But at that time, they just run it in there. It would be just about where this ink company is.
Oh, yeah.
They run it. I think that ink company is built on beet pulp.
Well, something is, because it said in the article that.
Yeah, they run it in there for miles.
Did they grow a lot of sugar beet around here?
Oh, they did, but it didn't seem to.
They used to work down in the north end too, because my father knew a lot of them.
Oh yes, they worked all over.
So they must have been. They
in
had
the
sugar
beet field.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't plan out so much. They did. This wasn't the right. They located it over near Bay City, see, now in the sugar beet factory. They dissolved this plant after they got the running, and they had trouble with it. They had trouble getting people to grow them. See, they wanted to cut the beet right off in half, see. And the farmers, they said, "Well, we don't make enough to pay to raise them." So they quit raising, see. So they practically had to fold up. I hope that stuff is all right on there.
I just wanted to see him.
I mean, for when way back when your mother was when you were young and your mother was keeping house.
We didn't have any vacuum cleaner.
Did you have a hand sweeper?
Monica, and the rest was all by hand, see, because we didn't have electricity until 30.
You just used the broom then?
And
took the ropes out and beat them on the line?
Yeah, you bet. Take them right out. Mother would take all that furniture every year, take it out.
Take all the carpet stuff, so all the tacks out.
And take it out and bend it. This room was a big carpet. And many times I've taken that carpet up, I helped her pull the tacks on it, take it out, and a good warm day, and she'd sweep it outdoors, and then take it down, and that was a day's job to go around that and stretch it and nail it. We had a carpet sweep. No, we didn't have electricity until 1935.
When you were young, then, did she have anyone that came in to help?
Yeah, we had a hired girl there that we just, Libby Dennings used to, at that time, girls couldn't buy a job, you know,
and
there
was
no.
They'd live right in here, wouldn't they?
Huh?
Did they live here?
Right oh, yeah, they lived the right here, sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, your mother made her own butter and all that stuff.
Oh, sure. She made all the butter and well, that before they started, the creamers started to buy any milk. Mm-hmm. They made the butter and their eggs.
Then did people ever come out here to get butter and eggs?
Yes, and then every year when we thrashed, we'd take down so many bags of wheat and get so much flour back. I think it's 38 pounds of flour.
Right?
38 pounds of flour, so many pounds of bran, and so many pounds of middlings. Mm-hmm. And we take that and get our wheat ground, and that was, we put the flour all up in the, usually kept it up there in the cedar chest.
Oh.
All in 25 pounds.
Big bag.
Yeah.
Oh, and then that wouldn't get busted.
Yeah, it wouldn't get busted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And our hams is all smoked and put in the oat bins.
In the oat bins?
Yeah.
Out in the barn?
Yeah.
Oh, just a minute. There you go. Now you can tell.
The teachers them days got $25 a month, and they walked 2 miles to school both ways.
There you go.
Yeah.
And why are you talking about the school? Where was the school?
Huh?
Tell where the school was in this
area. Oh, the school was, the first school was down here in Elmston District. Then they built this school up here.
On Riverview Drive?
Yeah, on Riverview Drive.
Right
that
next to the, in the area of the Red Wagon Antique Shop right here.
Yeah, it's...
where the Kenganese
lived.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mr. Williams
lived
there now.
Well, yeah. Williams lived there.
And what was that? Did you ever know here what that was like? You didn't go there, did you?
Where?
To the one-room schoolhouse? Did you
well,
go there?
Well, certainly, that's where.
Well,
I got
tell
my,
us about it.
That's all the buckskins we ever got is...
Oh, you went down there.
Yeah, but I'd say that was... that was where a lot of good businessmen of Kalamazoo graduated.
Yeah,
Jimmy Murray and... Quite a few,
do you remember the teacher's name?
Yeah, George Elmerson was one teacher, and Mrs. Barley was another teacher, and we had one teacher come out there, and the kids all beat her up.
She didn't last very long. She didn't last very long.
No, she went back to town. The school board got another one.
Oh.
She got the flirting with one of the students.
And they were, they're
barefooted.
Did
you go barefooted?
Oh, about the middle of April, we never knew what shoes was until fall.
Well,
And overall.
Why, I could walk right across the candy thistles and it wouldn't bother me at all.
What kind of games did you kids play when you were little?
Well, we slid downhill with barrel staves. That's the best skis that was ever seen out on this road.
Was that in the summer or the winter?
Oh, that was in the winter time. And then we used to play baseball with a homemade ball that we wound, and we used sawed off cant hooks that the loggers used in the sawmills. When they break a cant hook, they'd saw it off and it made a good bat. See, that's the only bats we ever had. I never see a professional bat until I got big enough to go to a big ball game.
Where'd you get your ball?
Oh, we made it out of hard rubber, and then they put a cover on it, just like a regular ball, and sewed it up. So that we had fellows that knew how to sew them. It was the only ball baseball we ever had. Football, we never went in on football.
Oh.
That was all.
Going back to what we were on before about the house, what kind of a stove did your mother cook on? A wood burning iron stove or what?
Well, a cast iron stove with four griddles and a water heater and a oven. What do you call them ovens?
Warming oven.
Huh?
Warming oven. Those things we used to have with my mother.
Yeah.
And then what was the girl, the lady thing that came in? The lady that sold the clothes, what was her name?
Oh, that was Margaret McHugh. Yeah.
And she used to stay for about 3 weeks?
Yeah, two, three weeks. She made a lot of my shirts. She put new sleeves into them.
That she'd happen.
She put new sleeves into them. I remember, I got a picture. I had it until I burned it up where I went. Body part of it was painted out, but the new gingham she got at what's that? Jake Levi's. Mrs. Cagney and the mother would. That was they was their two of their best customers. Jake Levi.
So did she bring the material with her then?
Oh, mother would get the material. Dad used to do the shopping.
Oh.
He had her sister-in-law, Rose Shields. Poor Rose was always.
My sister-in-law, she was Maine's sister-in-law.
Huh?
She was Maine's sister-in-law.
Yeah, Maine's sister-in-law. Well,
she worked at Bruin.
Yeah.
That was one of
the
lovely old stories.
He'd go in and he'd say, Rose, I've got sis wants some kind of gingham clothes or something like that. She'd go and pick it out for him, and she knew what mother wanted.
Then did they have a sewing machine, or did she sew them by hand?
Oh, yeah, she had no sewing machine.
She
didn't
by chance make one of those dresses upstairs?
No.
Where did
they get those, do you think?
Oh, that was Aunt Marcia's. Those were Aunt Marcia's. She probably had a
Oh, I imagine she...
They were more made, money. They yeah. were in the money more.
Yeah.
But they were probably made by someone.
Oh, yeah.
I think
they was made by some...
What was her name? Aunt Marcia? Bumber? No.
Marcia,
They were quite...
Marcia...
They're real nice.
Yeah, they are. Beautiful.
What was Aunt Marcia? Underwood. Marcia Underwood.
Marcia
one of the best bake shops in Kalamazoo, right where Gilmore's clothing store is.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then McDonald's had a drugstore the next door from there.
And the Green Teapot was across the road.
Well, the Green Teapot was up farther way up across.
What was the Green Teapot?
Where the chocolate shop used to be.
Yeah.
The old chocolate shop.
Yeah.
Well, that's where she had the teapot.
Well, what was it? It was a
high class, delicate.
She's just.
catered to parties of...
Which, of course, she got married somewhere. What was her... she was a relative of yours, wasn't she?
Well, she was
Aunt
Marcia's
sister.
Did your mother have a washing machine?
Yeah, she had one, and if she'd been living to this very day, she'd still use that washing machine.
Was it one of those you cranked by hand?
No, back and forth like that.
Oh, on the board?
No, it had a rocker.
Oh,
it had a rocker, and she swore by that.
What made it rock?
Huh?
What made it rock? Oh,
well, you wait,
you
kept
push
going.
It?
You probably rocked it.
You rocked it.
Well, that's what I wanted to know, because I've seen them with the kind you crank.
No,
push this one, huh?
Uncle Gene was, started to take on some washing machines in Carlo Lot, you know, and still looked around these hardware stores. So he says, well, Mother, he says, I'll send you up a washing machine. So he set one up, rocked on the floor, see. Well, it made a hole in the old kitchen floor. That didn't suit Mother at all. And she went back, and Dad helped her get it in, get it filled up with water. And she had her old brass lined kettles, you know, to heat her water every Monday. And she'd go out there and
did she wash on Monday?
Always, I think it was always on Monday.
Yeah.
And her clothes out.
You gotta tell about friends.
Yeah.
No matter how cold it was, it's cold. I've seen her go out there the coldest day and hang her clothes out and come in with her hands just ringing.
Did she hang them out in the winter, too?
Yeah, mm-hmm. She'd hang them out and let them kind of freeze dry, you know.
Yeah, we don't know, do we?
Oh, God.
Well, tell me about the furniture.
Yeah, all the furniture. Upstairs, you had some beautiful pieces.
Did you have some?
Well, that was, I wouldn't know where that they got it.
Well, they were a beautiful wood, I know.
Well, I think Uncle George was a, he was an adjuster for the Northwestern Insurance Company. And he used to get, come to places where they'd have, they'd take, the company would take it all, the whole store. And I think, if I remember right, some of our stuff would come. He would buy it, and then he'd call up Dad and say, well, can you use it? And I think that's where they got a lot of it. I don't ever remember.
Yeah.
No,
and
the
square
Randy
had.
And the high bed.
He had a hobby. He never smoked or drank. And he had a hobby for buying dishes. And he had four homes on Academy Street. 721 was one of them, and then the next house to it was he owned, and then two across the street. And his home on Academy Street was, he had a dining room that they had it all finished in burlap, red burlap, see, and that was, at that time, red was all off rage, see, in the dining room. And that was paneled all about that high.
Halfway up.
And all, it was burlap with a paint over it, see. Oh, it was beautiful. He had a molding right around the top, and she had some of her nice dishes setting up there. And then they had a beautiful red carpet and going to a beautiful dining room, and he had a hobby for cut a glass stuff and fine dishes, and he had a couple of cabinets at home there and all beautiful stuff that was in the house, see. And didn't that old devil, when he died, she just raised hell with him. Yep, your life was just miserable. Where is it going?
Yes.
You'll have to cut that out.
Yeah. No, but you could say that a lot of the beautiful pieces were in this.
You have some of his cut glass now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Silver, too.
Yeah.
And silver from Wortley's, we had a lot of that.
Silver from Wortley's? Oh, What were some of the things that the community did, like picnics, and what did they do for the in their leisure time?
Oh, they used to have barn racings, and when the new barn was built, they all they had to do was pass the word around, and they come for miles to raise the barn, and they always figured on having a barrel of good hard cider for armor, and the women would come that day and tie quilts off. The yard would be full of women tying quilts off.
That is interesting.
Yeah, the women would be tying the quilts off. The men, folks would hang around the barn, and no, they didn't get drunk or anything like that. They just
had a good time.
Just had a good time.
They made their own
fun.
And then they would probably have a big meal when they got
there. Yeah, they'd have a big meal. And
did they do anything special on holidays, different than they do now?
No, most generally the holidays was
like 4th of July and Christmas.
Well, they'd have things going on. Yeah, they'd have things going on. That this house was robbed one 4th of July, and we went down to parade, and we had a double buggy, and Dad and Mother took us, came down to the parade, and we left here and didn't get back till about 2 o'clock. And Mrs. Dickinson used to be we used to keep her horse for her, and she used to buy eggs and butter down here. She had a driver that was always drove her around, and she had a nice coach horse. And so he come in, and she wanted a drink. And so he come in and went around to the well house and got a dipper and took her out a drink, see? And when he did, somebody, a red-headed fella, come out of the house, and he says, well, he says, I guess they're all gone away or something like that. And that was all he said. And when we got home, why, I guess he got in the back way somewhere, or the front way, or raised up a window. Anyway, as soon as Mother come in, why, she said, the drawers is all pulled right onto the dressers, and just dumped right on the floor, and,
you can see that one dresser upstairs that they tried in this
room. We used to have Dad's brothers and friends used to have a kind of a lodge there, come down here to go hunting, see, and they had also would leave their weapons down here, rifles and shotguns. And so when they got home, every room in the house had a firearm loaded. Mm-hmm. And upstairs, I can assure you some where they chiseled the drawers open to get the doors open, and they just tipped the box right off. When they took, Newman and I had about $150 worth of stuff that we'd had given us for old money banks and piggy banks and stuff like that. And but we never found, they never found out who they were or anything about it.
What was the first church that was out in this area? Was there many churches?
No, there wasn't any church out here.
Maybe the Methodist that came with you?
No, they didn't. They never come out here until they built this one up here.
What about that little white one down there on Ruby Drive? Across from Harding? It's Presbyterian.
Oh. Oh, well, the Nagels built that.
Oh, now that's the north. That's
yeah.
North. Not so there wasn't any church out
there? No, there was only six or seven houses between our place and the River Bridge.
Yeah.
And
you just had to go into Kelmsville.
Huh?
Just had to go into Kelmsville.
Yeah, then you when you got at the River Bridge, from the River Bridge up as far as Seminary Street, there's a row of houses all went up there close together. The streetcar used to come right up from the top of the hill at Seminary Street.
What was there any effect on this immediate area during the Depression? Out in Parchment, during the Depression, was there any?
No,
was it pretty much the same?
About the same.
Yeah.
And there was a ladies' seminary.
Oh, yeah, there was a ladies' seminary up on top of the Gull Road and
River Drive.
Yeah, that was a ladies' seminary up there. They used to,
right
in back of St. Mary's. St. Mary's is about where the...
All over the area of the Shell Station.
Where St. Mary's parking lot is, was a big 3 or 4 story building up there, seminary for girls. No,
Money's class.
Oh, yeah.
Used to, they belonged to some church, but they used to come down in files, single files or double files.
I kind of remember them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was.
What was the first auto you family owned? What was the first automobile that your family owned?
1912.
What was it?
Ford.
Model T?
Yeah, Model T. We bought it for $360 and sold it for $400.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
That was when Ford first came out with his car. His car of the year. $360 for the Ford. No tax rate, no federal tax or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We used to buy it. 10 gallons of gas for a dollar.
And that probably lasted you a long time.
Yeah, boy, that was.
When did you get your phone? You had the only phone in the 30s.
Oh, well, we had that phone. That was, our phone was one of the first phones that come out of the of Kalamazoo. Years ago, we had phones here. We had a phone here when a lot of people in town didn't have phones.
Do you remember when that was?
Well, it was a long time
ago. Shields was lived out there, and that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because you told how they came down.
Was that before you
called
the
doctor?
Was that when you were real little, or before?
Yeah, well, because I remember one night years ago when I was a kid, there was a knock coming at the door, and there was a fellow from Silver Creek. He come in. He had a team of horses out there. And he wanted to call up the doctor. He said his wife was awfully sick. And he called his doctor up, and the doctor, he says, I want you to come out. And the doctor says, all right. He says, I'll be right out. But he says, you can't only come as far as Russell's. He says, the roads is, they've drifted full, see. So he drove out here, his horse and cutter. We used to have a lot of heavy wood sleighs go by here, and our road was pretty good. I mean, it was drifts that high, but a horse and cutter could get over it. But when you got down the road any farther, why, it was just a team of horses, you know. Well, anyway, this doctor drove out. I forget now what doctor it was, but he drove in, and Dad took his horse and took it off the cutter and put it in the barn and put a blanket on it. And this fellow, I forget now what his name was, and he took this doctor way back to Silver Creek with his team of horses.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed there and took care of his wife and then come back. And he got back here long in the morning, and Dad heard him coming, and he got up and helped him harness his horse up, hitch him up, and come back to town.
Mm-hmm.
That's when doctors, they go all over.
Yeah.
Them
didn't you say one time that your mother used to deliver the babies and stay with the mothers?
Yeah, she did. I think she delivered.
Mother did, they?
Yeah,
huh?
I thought
she had
mother.
Yeah.
All
them Lemmy kids over there, I guess mother was the first one that ever got there before they was.
I don't know.
What was
were people that lived in Parchment when KVP moved in, were they happy to have it moved in, the mill?
Oh, they...
What was their attitude?
They, kind of...
Just a minute. It's going. Go ahead.
Why, they was people from Ohio come up here that had worked in paper mills down there, and they come up here, and of course this is new work for them, but they all seem to stay it out, raise their families, and got married, raised their families.
The people that were already here, when the mill came in, were they happy to have them here?
Oh, they welcomed them.
See the growth ahead.
How did they feel after
they'd
been here for a while? Did they still like
Mr. Schoenberg? They always liked some of the families, the younger ones, went to working in the mill. This mill was very good about hiring their own people, you know. Mr. Kindleberger come down there and told us, he said, "Now, no one, you and Derp's got a job up here anytime you ever want it." And Newman was in the working for Wheeler & Laney for 15 years, you know, and he got the runner lust in him and quit the job and went down to Texas and come back, and then the depression come on, and hell, he was working for about $15 a week in this Temple sheet metal company, and finally they closed down.
Was that when he started working at KVP?
Yeah. He come out there, and I said, "You go up there and ask him." Oh, he says, "I haven't got a chance in the world." I said, he says, "I haven't got a chance." I said, "Yes, you have." And I said, "You don't. I'll go up there with you." Oh, he said, "You don't do that." And so I give my good old father to talking to, and he went up there, and Mr. Kindleberger see him. He said, "Well, Newman, what are you doing?" Newman said, "We're just now looking for a job." Well, he said, "You get right in the office there and get to work." And he worked there for 50 or 18 years after that.
And that was the start of the growth in parts.
Yeah. I just wondered if people, you know, were happy to have him.
They welcomed
him.
I heard some people say, you know, that Mr. Kindleberger sometimes, you know, got asked them about their yards and stuff. But
well, no, he was a man that he wanted everything kept up in good shape. He didn't want if they were working at the mill there and lived in an old run-down place and throw the garbage out the windows, he wouldn't tolerate it. See, he'd say, "No, we're paying you enough to," and he'd either tell them to get out and get someplace else, and he'd get somebody else. No, he had a lot of public spirit about him.
I've heard he had a lot of activities going on.
Oh,
You know, social things.
Yeah, he did. He always had things going on.
That community house
was wonderful. Yeah, he had parties and things like that. They used to give their help a ham or a turkey or something like that every year. And Parchment was the other mills, they had a kind of a feeling towards Parchment because we got better treatment out here than they did in town, see. A lot of people around. Jack Mahoney couldn't speak a good word for Kindleberger.
Right.
Yeah. He couldn't.
They were jealous.
Huh?
They were jealous.
Well, they should, though.
I said they were jealous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's...
Well...
No, he built this community out, and he loaned them, he got them financed, and lower interest rates, and he wanted good, respectful homes put up, and he said he wanted to keep your yards up. He'd give a price of, I think, $100 for the best kept lawn, see, and which was all right. No, he was a great man. I've always had the highest respect for Mr. Kittle. He did a lot for Parchment. It's never been the same since.